Good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Derek Murray, and today I'm going to talk about CL, which is a system that we've been developing at the University of Cambridge to make distributed programming easier. Now, this is joint work with my colleagues Malte Schwarzkopf, Chris Smoten, Steve Smith, Anil Madhavapeti, and my supervisor Steve Hand, all of whom are at the University of Cambridge. So CL is a distributed execution engine, an heir to systems like MapReduce and Dryad, which are designed to compute on big data stored in a commodity cluster. Now, in return for structuring your computation as a directed graph of tasks and dependencies, an execution engine takes care of the tedious aspects of distributed programming. It schedules tasks when their dependencies are fulfilled, schedules them close to where the data is, balances load across the cluster, and perhaps most importantly, it transparently deals with the inevitable failures. So what's the problem with these systems? Well, this task graph execution model has limited expressive power. In particular, because these graphs are statically specified ahead of time, and they are acyclic, they cannot express computations that look like this. So here you've got an algorithm that does some large amount of work in parallel, maybe a MapReduce step or something more complicated, and then that's followed by an aggregation, the result of which is used in a convergence test, so to perform fixed point iteration. So this is not an artificial example, and there's many algorithms in machine learning, information retrieval, graph theory, linear algebra, and other fields that use exactly this pattern when working on big data. If you've ever had to write those algorithms using something like MapReduce, the usual workaround looks something like this. You have a driver program that runs outside the cluster, submitting jobs to the execution engine that run one iteration, and then the driver program fetches the results back, performs the convergence test locally on the client, and decides whether or not to submit another job. So what's wrong with that? Well, first of all, for practical reasons, we have the overhead of submitting multiple jobs to the cluster. So our experiments with Hadoop showed that it takes a 100-node Hadoop cluster about approximately 30 seconds minimum to run a job. So by a simple application of Amdahl's law, this limits the maximum parallel speedup that you can achieve in this environment. Of course, we could always just make this very fast, but then we wouldn't have a very interesting paper. A more fundamental problem is that the driver program has a critical amount of state. So its runtime stack contains state about the running computation. And because it runs outside the cluster, it's not subject to the transparent fault tolerance that the execution engine provides. So if it fails, you lose the whole computation. And this raises the question, how could we represent an algorithm like this in such a way that the whole thing runs in the cluster as a single reliable job? So CL is our answer to that question. And in the remainder of the talk, I'm going to introduce the system at a number of different levels. I'll talk first about the execution model, which is an extension of these task dependency graphs. I'll move on to our programming model, which uses a scripting language that we've developed called Skywriting. And then I'll briefly touch on fault tolerance, our implementation, and the evaluation, which is in the paper. So as the title of the talk rather boldly claims, CL is a universal execution model. And what this means is that we've taken the existing task dependency graphs from MapReduce and Dryad and added the ability for a job to dynamically rewrite the graph while running in a controlled manner. And as a result, CL can support the same class of algorithms as a Turing machine, which is why we call it a universal execution model. The practical consequence of this is that CL supports a superset of the algorithms that can run on existing engines. The static task graphs of these systems are just degenerate cases of CL's dynamic task graphs. And this means that CL can trivially run any MapReduce or Dryad-style computation. Since our key idea is the dynamic task graph, let's have a look at one in a little more detail. In the simplest case, it looks a lot like a Dryad DAG. There are tasks representing deterministic computation on a single machine, and objects, which are unstructured finite-length sequences of bytes. A task is defined by its dependencies. And this means that all of the code and data required to run the task are stored in objects. This means if you have a Java task, for example, The dependencies will include the input data, the name of the main class, and a jar file with the necessary classes to run it. Our objects can be concrete, and this means they exist on at least one machine in the cluster, or they can be future, which simply means that another task is scheduled to produce them. So this is how we build up dependency relations between tasks. And a task can only run once all of its inputs are concrete. So far, the graph looks pretty static. The dynamism comes from a task's outputs. Each task has one or more expected outputs. And in the common case, a task will just write an output, write an object for that output and publish it as a result. But there is an alternative to this. A task can spawn a subgraph of child tasks and delegate the production of its outputs to those tasks. So here, task T spawns tasks A and B and delegates its outputs Y and Z to them. A and B may, in turn, when they run, decide to delegate their outputs to another task. And so we can have jobs that contain unbounded amounts of work, including iterative and recursive computations. So the system to support this is quite a familiar structure. We have a single master, which is responsible for coordination, and one or more workers, which actually execute the tasks. The master has two key pieces of state. These are the task table and the object table. And together, these store the current state of the dynamic task graph in a running job. As tasks run, are dispatched to the idle workers, they will spawn more tasks, updating the task table, and publish more objects, updating the object table. At this point, I should say that the objects table only contains references to the task. It doesn't contain the data itself, and this is how we're able to scale to large amounts of data. So the scheduler continues to dispatch tasks to idle workers as tasks become runnable until such time as we've produced the output of the job. The worker, on the other hand, does two things. It executes tasks and it stores objects. So when a task comes in, it's directed to the appropriate executor, which you can think of as a kind of loader for different types of tasks. So continuing our Java example, this task goes to the Java executor, which starts a JVM, loads the classes in the given jar file and instantiates a named task class. As far as possible, the task will read its inputs from the local object store on the worker. The scheduler contains a heuristic that attempts to schedule the task near to where the bulk of its data is stored. Of course, this is not always possible, so a task can also read remotely from another worker. And once the task completes, it writes its outputs to the local object store and sends messages back to the master with the tasks that it has spawned and the objects that it has published. So that's how the system works, but how do you actually program it? And after all, I said up front that our aim was to make distributed programming easier, but CL's dynamic task graphs are obviously more complicated than the static task graphs in systems like MapReduce and Dryad. Well, to simplify the creation of these graphs, we developed a language called Skywriting, which is a scripting language that runs on top of CL. It's interpreted, dynamically typed, and has a syntax resembling C or JavaScript, and its main feature is that it lets you mix imperative control flow with task spawning. This means you can write the while loop example I showed you earlier, and it will run as a single job on a CL cluster. The neat idea in the implementation is how a running script is transformed into a data flow program through the dynamic task graph. The runtime state of a Skywriting script is stored as a CL object on which the Skywriting task depends. However, as far as the programmer sees, there is just a normal imperative or functional programming model, and it's the runtime that's responsible for transforming that script into a data flow program. So here's how that works. From CL's point of view, there are two important Skywriting features. The first is task spawning. So the spawn built-in function takes a Skywriting function and some arguments and creates a task to execute that function asynchronously. To do this, the runtime builds a closure and stores it as a CL object, then creates a new task that depends on the closure. The result of spawn is a future. And this corresponds to the future object that is the output of the spawn task. So futures provide deterministic synchronization. They let us build up dependencies by passing them around as first-class objects. And they also prevent deadlock, because a task's arguments cannot contain a future that depends on that task. To have data-dependent control flow, you've got to be able to interrogate the result of a task. So the other important feature is the dereference operator. And this is applied to a future to evaluate its result, and it blocks the current task until the dereference result is available. So CL doesn't actually allow tasks to block because they would consume cluster resources while waiting for something else, and you could lead to deadlock. Instead, when a task dereferences a future, it saves the current continuation as a CL object and spawns another task that depends on that continuation and the dereference future object. It also delegates the result of the current task to the continuation task. This makes blocking and data flow explicit in the task graph, which simplifies fault tolerance and also allows tasks to migrate between workers when they block. So we can use this to build up bigger programs from these primitives. Here's MapReduce as a skywriting function, which takes a list of inputs, a mapper function, and a reducer function, just like regular MapReduce. So the first line applies the mapper function to each of the inputs, spawning one map task per input. The mapper function partitions its output into a fixed number of partitions, so the overall output of this step is a list of futures. Next, the map outputs are shuffled or transposed so that all of the ith outputs from the mappers become inputs to the ith reducer. And finally, the reducer is applied to the shuffled intermediate data, and the final result is a list with one output per reducer. In fact, you don't actually have to write this code because MapReduce is part of the skywriting standard library. So we can use our MapReduce function to implement iterative algorithms such as k-means clustering. Now, in this algorithm, we assume that you have a large data set containing points, which are the blue diamonds here, and you want to find k points that represent clusters in this data. So the algorithm starts by picking k random points for the initial clusters. Here we have k equals 2, represented by the orange diamonds. Then, for each blue data point, you compute the distance to all of the orange cluster points and choose the cluster that's nearest. You can now group the data points by their nearest cluster point, and in the reducer, you sum all the points in that group together, divide by the number of points to get a centroid, and the resulting centroids are used as the cluster points for the next iteration. Now, in most cases, the clustering becomes more accurate as the algorithm iterates, and it eventually reaches a fixed point when the positions of the clusters do not change from one iteration to the next. In skywriting, this looks a lot like our motivating example program. We have a call to MapReduce inside a do-while loop. So the algorithm starts with the data points split into coarse grain partitions in the same way that Hadoop or the original MapReduce would do, and an initial guess at the cluster points. The main work is done in the call to MapReduce, which associates each data point with the nearest cluster center and computes the new centroids. We then spawn another task to perform the convergence test. This takes the current clusters and the previous clusters and compares them. And finally, in the condition of the while loop, we dereference the result of the convergence test. This blocks the current task until all of the spawn tasks have run, and so it implicitly creates a continuation task. Now, based on the results of that convergence test, we may either run another iteration of the algorithm or return the current set of clusters. And in some cases, the number of iterations can become very large, tens or hundreds of iterations. So as the job gets longer and longer, it becomes more likely that one of the participants in the job will fail. So we need some way to provide reliable execution. And now let's take a look at how that works. And most existing systems only provide worker fault tolerance. This means identifying the workers that have failed and re-executing tasks that ran on those workers if their outputs are needed elsewhere. In addition to this, though, CL provides client fault tolerance. And this is actually trivial. Because there is no driver program as a single point of failure, The client plays no role once it has submitted the job. CL performs all the necessary control flow itself in the skywriting script. And we can always re-execute parts of the skywriting script because we have deterministic synchronization and deterministic task execution. What's more, CL can also tolerate master failure. So as I said earlier, the critical state in the master is the dynamic task graph. So we need some way to recreate this. At a minimum, what we could do is just store the root task for each job. And since task execution is deterministic, replaying the job from the root task would eventually lead to the whole graph being recreated. However, this could lead to a lot of wasted work, since the job has to restart from the beginning. And if the mean time between failure of the master is shorter than the expected length of the job, then we might never make progress. So we look for an optimization, and it's actually quite simple. It's based on the realization that the state of the dynamic task graph is built up from the metadata that the workers send back to the master as they run tasks. So the that is the tasks that are spawned in task execution and the objects that are published. We can take this metadata and log it to a persistent metadata journal for each job, and then when the master fails and subsequently restarts, simply replay the metadata journal to rebuild the state of the graph when it failed. We can actually do a bit better than this, and instead of logging it to a file, send all of the metadata updates to a standby master, which is just like a regular master, except it doesn't have any workers. The standby master builds up the state of the task graph in its memory and monitors the primary master to see if it has failed. Now, when the standby detects that the primary has failed, it will contact all of the workers, assume control of them, and take over where the primary left off. And in our experiments on a small 20-node cluster with a heartbeat between the standby and primary of a period of 5 seconds, the total downtime due to master failure was about 7 or 8 seconds. So this is some negligible cost. So we've implemented everything that I've described in about 9,000 lines of Python. And this includes the code for the master and the worker and the skywriting language, its interpreter and the runtime. There's also code in other languages to support the executors. So we can run tasks written in Java, C, C#, Python, and a few other languages. This uses a foreign language execution primitive that I don't have time to show. I haven't said much about data storage because it is, at least conceptually, very simple. Although, if you saw the Triton sort talk earlier today, you can do a lot of work to make that a lot better, and that's something we'll have to investigate in the future. So what we do is we simply store objects as files on workers. There are some optimizations for very small objects, which can be stored in line, and other workers, if they have to access objects, can get at them through a lightweight HTTP server. There's also support for streaming data between tasks, but for more details of how that works, see the paper or ask me afterwards. To test CL and demonstrate its generality, we developed several applications, which you can see here. And right now, I'm going to focus on three representative examples. GREP, which is a MapReduce-style job, the k-means algorithm that I showed you earlier, and something completely different, a dynamic programming algorithm called binomial options pricing that doesn't fit neatly into the MapReduce pattern. The code for the other applications and these and the applications that I'll discuss are available from our website if you want to learn more about them. So first, we took the GREP example application from Hadoop and ported it to CL. This is a classic MapReduce-style job. It's in the original MapReduce paper. It's one of the standard examples. We wanted to see how CL scales to larger clusters. So we varied the number of workers from 10 to 100 and measured the completion time of the same job using both Hadoop and CL. Now, the task code for both versions is the same. It's only the framework that differs. On a 22 gigabyte Wikipedia data set, Hadoop takes about 350 seconds on 10 workers down to about 90 seconds on 100 workers. I should add that these workers are Amazon EC2 M1.small virtual machine instances. By contrast, CL is much faster, taking about 250 seconds on 10 workers and about 50 seconds on 100 workers. Now, this puzzled us at first because we took the same code. We didn't expect it to be much faster. To find the reason, if we replot this on a relative scale, taking Hadoop to be 100%, we see that the relative duration of the CL version becomes smaller, decreasing from 71% on 10 workers to about 60% on 100 workers. And this shows the impact of the slow job submission in Hadoop. Here we see that the job setup cost grows as the amount of, and the relative amount of job setup cost grows as the amount of work per worker becomes smaller. So CL achieves much faster job submission. But that wasn't a primary aim, it's just a nice side effect. For k-means, we ported the Apache Mahout implementation of k-means from Hadoop to CL, again retaining the same data format and computational kernel to keep the two implementations as similar as possible. We fixed the cluster size at 20 workers and varied the input size and steps from 1.6 million to 8 million vectors. Now here, k is 100, and the size of the vectors is 100 double values. The graph shows the length of a single iteration, averaged over 5 runs, so again, lower is better. Hadoop takes about 4.5 minutes for the smallest case, increasing approximately linearly to around 15 minutes for 8 million vectors. CL is between 2 and 3 minutes faster per iteration for each input size. And this discrepancy can't be explained by startup overhead alone. On closer inspection, we saw that Hadoop was suffering from a large number of non-data local tasks. This is because HDFS, the distributed file system that it uses, randomly allocates blocks to machines, and this uniformly at random, and this leads to poor load balance. We used the same policy in CL, but because our scheduler remembers where a task ran in a previous iteration, and where that input was consumed, we can achieve better data locality in subsequent iterations, and so the overall runtime is shorter. This is another advantage of putting the iteration as a first-class property of your execution engine. So finally, I'll talk about binomial options pricing. And this is a dynamic programming algorithm where each element depends on the element to its left, the one below and to the left, and the one below and to its left. The goal is to compute the value on the top right, which is the expected value of a stock option at some point in the future. A dependency structure like this is not embarrassingly parallel, so it doesn't fit neatly into the map-produced paradigm. What we did was divide the dynamic programming matrix into chunks and assign one task to each chunk. The parallelism then arises from a streaming facility, which allows one task to start consuming another's output before it's been completely written. So we can therefore get some pipeline parallelism. The key variable in this experiment is the number of chunks. So increasing the number of chunks increases the number of tasks, and hence the amount of opportunity for parallelism. However, if we have too many chunks, the amount of work in each task becomes very small, and the per-task overhead starts to dominate. So running on 47 workers in this case, we first ran binomial options with a problem size of 200,000. The graph shows the parallel speedup attained in each configuration, so higher is better. And the peak in this experiment is around 5x speedup between 20 and 30 tasks, after which the speedup drops off due to overhead. So 5x speedup is not particularly impressive on 47 machines. In fact, it's a waste of money. But we can easily increase the amount of work by increasing the size of the matrix. Doubling the size of the matrix leads to a 9x speedup, and increasing it further leads to even bigger speedups. So for a problem size of 1.6 million elements, CL reduces the runtime from well over 5 hours to less than 15 minutes. Okay, so we're at the end. To conclude, our two key contributions are the dynamic task graphs, which extend task dependency graphs to support data-dependent control flow, and our language skywriting, a scripting language that automatically transforms code written in an imperative style into these dynamic task graphs. CL shows that these techniques are practical, and our implementation offers reliable execution and competitive performance running on a commodity cluster. We're continuing to improve CL and our next steps, including supporting languages other than skywriting for coordination, and improving performance when clusters are built from next-generation many-core machines. All right, so if you'd like to know more details, please check out our website, which includes links to the full source code and the example applications. At this point, though, I'd like to thank you all for listening and take any questions that you have.
Hey, Anirudh Badam, Princeton. I was wondering if you had looked into any other deadlock avoidance strategies, because making the child wait only on concrete objects sort of seems restrictive, or do you think that it is expressive enough?
Deadlock. So at the moment, if you dereference an object, you have to wait until that particular object is available. And of course, if there's some variance in the length of the task that produces those objects, you may choose the wrong one. You may end up blocking on a long task when you could have blocked on a short one and got some useful work done. So what we looked at was having a select, the equivalent of the select system call for a number of spawn tasks. And we implemented this. It's quite easy to implement as a feature, but doing it reliably is more of a challenge, because now you have non-determinism in the execution of your program. So replaying the right sequence of tasks requires you to store some state, and you have to store that reliably. If you lose it, then you can end up with cascading failures. So that's something we're looking into, but we haven't implemented in the current version. Thanks.
Ken Yocum, UCSD. So I think this is really interesting, and one of the things I was wondering if you could comment more on was optimizations, because a lot of people sort of recognize that MapReduce doesn't do iterative incremental stuff very well, and so there have been projects like Hadoop Online or even other things that are building other kinds of languages on top of these data flows and doing, you know, optimizations using those. So I was wondering if you could comment on, you know, what kind of optimizations your particular model enables and whether you've looked at those.
So the reason that we've taken an approach different from the iterative Hadoop, just to justify that first of all, is that the iterative Hadoop implementations rely on you having a simple MapReduce structure, whereas you can end up with jobs that look more like dryad graphs with joins and other complicated data flows that we wanted to be able to support. So that's why we haven't taken that approach. In terms of optimizations, the main opportunity for making these things perform better is to look at how the data is transferred between the tasks. So our streaming functionality is quite good when you have low rate data moving between tasks. But when you have high bandwidth data, I think we can optimize that a lot further. And looking at something like the TerraSort problem would be a case where we ought to optimize more. In terms of optimizations, specifically using the iterative structure of computations, one of the things we saw, and this almost fell out as a matter of chance, was that we were using our object stores as read-through caches. And this meant that on subsequent iterations, more data was local, and data tended to spread through the cluster until you were able to construct a good schedule with a simple scheduler. Something we've thought about is speculative execution for these iterations, but I'm not sure how much of a win you get. This will probably be predicated on having a very expensive convergence test combined with a short map stage that can make useful progress before the conversion test is completed.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Hi, Theo Benson, Wisconsin, Madison.
Hi.
I had a question. Basically, right now you've looked at the more static approach, basically changing the language to make it more to make it effective.
Yeah.
I was wondering about more dynamic issues, basically outliers. Does the language make detection easier? Does it improve?
So the language certainly doesn't make it easier. And in fact, as I said in the answer to the first question, having deterministic synchronization makes it hard to deal with these rather non-deterministic effects like stragglers occurring in a cluster. So our long-term strategy for this is to incrementally introduce controlled non-determinism so that you can, for example, spawn two copies of a task and shoot down the one that's last to finish programmatically, and then build up straggler detection policies that are tailored to the particular, for example, skew in the data set, the particular characteristics of the cluster, or whatever. In the current implementation, in fact, we haven't even dealt with straggler detection. It turned out we weren't getting many stragglers because of the controlled conditions
right.
of our experiments. In the wild, this would become more of a problem. There's lots of work been done on that, and we could implement some of those algorithms to address it in the meantime.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
One last question while
you're
doing the next speaker setup.
Okay.
Does some of the extra cutting you're processing another task at that point in time. So now the data needs to be moved someplace else.
So that could happen if you had a shared cluster with multiple jobs running at once. Most of the most of the blocking structures we've seen with this dereference operator have been like the do while loop that I showed. So there's only one task that blocks, and there's kind of a barrier, so this problem doesn't tend to arise so much. I doubt it would be the context switching that would be the main cost. So in the k-means example, we were spending on the order of a couple of seconds in the task that was performing the control flow, and this was much less than the cost of submitting another job to something like Hadoop. So I'd say that cost would probably be quite relatively minor.